talking to you about poetry. I am talking to you. I am talking to you about poetry. I am talking to you about poetry. And you say, when do we eat? When do we eat? I am talking to you about poetry. The worst of it is, I'm hungry too.
Welcome to the Broadway Radio Show. I'm Donald Feltham, and I'm delighted to welcome back Georgia Stitt. Hi, Georgia.
Hi, Donald.
It's been a while since you've been on. I actually looked back, and it has been 6 years. The last time you were on was April of 2020, believe it or not, which was right at the start of COVID. It was like everything had just shut down, and you were here chatting about A Quiet Revolution, your album. And of course, we are going to talk a little bit about how the pandemic affected this new project, this new album that has just been released called...
Yes, this timeline makes a lot of sense to me.
Yes. Your new album is called Bell Tower, which was just released by Concord Theatricals. It was released just this Friday, March 6th. And it's a wonderful, interesting collection of songs, which we're going to dive into. And it's got a fantastic lineup of vocalists, including people like Kate Baldwin and Mark Kudish and Kelly O'Hara and Ruth Ann Miles and Nikki Renee Daniels. And I'm not even scratching the surface. There's all sorts of wonderfully talented people on here, which we will dive into that also. But tell listeners kind of how this project came about. I think if I read correctly, it started with a ride on the subway.
It did. It really does have a great origin story. Sure. In Manhattan, you can be on the subway and it's chaos. You're commuting and just amidst the flood of people, and you can look up from your seat, and where there normally would be advertisements, there is sometimes a program called Poetry in Motion, and it's just a poem meant to like pull you out of your, I mean, I don't really know what it's meant to do, but what it does for me is it pulls me out of my, the mundane part of the commute into something a bit loftier. And so I read a poem called Communication. That was actually written in Spanish and then translated into English. And it made me laugh out loud. It was a tiny, tiny poem, just a few lines. And I thought it was really witty and delightful. And so I took a picture of it with my cell phone so that I would remember it. And I came home and went about my day. And then I looked up the poem and I looked up the poet, and I found out that she was alive and she lived in Los Angeles, and she had a website. So I wrote her and I said, I loved your poem. It made me laugh. I'm a composer. How would you feel about letting me set it to music? And she wrote back and said, that would be delightful. I think it would be a very short song. And so it began this process of, I wrote it, it's 53 seconds on the album. It has a punchline. It gets a laugh when we perform it live. And I thought, it's not a common art form, just very, very short songs, but they're very useful for singers. They can be encores when you're performing in a recital. They can be audition pieces for people who need very short things to perform. And so I thought, can I come up with a handful of those and turn them into a song cycle? And that is the origin of what turned into a song cycle called Small Talk, a very short song cycle.
Mm-hmm. It's the album itself, it obviously expanded because it's, and talk about how that happened, because it's now a full album. It's not really just a small song cycle, right?
Right. Right. There are 26 tracks on the album. 16 of them are the very short songs. So there are 10 other full length, I call them theatrical art songs. But the whole album is a collection of pieces that you know, I am a lyricist, but these poems are not mine. They are found poetry. And they're not even when they're collaborations with lyricists, like Mindy Dickstein wrote some, Faye Greenberg. These are people who are theatrical lyricists as well. I asked them to write poetry, to think differently about what they were writing and to not write song lyrics, but to write something that was meant to live on the page, to be seen. And then the challenge for me is to how you translate something that was meant to be read, to be experienced visually, and turn it into something that's meant to be experienced orally. So there are 10 pieces. The 10 other pieces that aren't part of the short song cycle, all have additional instruments playing with them. They have chamber instrumentation, and many of my musician friends got a chance to play on the album as well. But the short song cycle is just piano and voice.
And the interesting thing is I think, as you just said, is it's a collection of existing poems, as well as some new things written specifically for this album, and collection. So talk a little bit about the process you went through, I guess, initially when it was Small Talk, the song cycle. How did you go about finding and kind of selecting the existing poems that you wanted to focus on? I mean, there had to be some sort of thematic thing you were looking for. I mean, what drew you to specific poems?
Sure. There wasn't a thematic thing at first. The theme was short. and I, you know, it has been years. I've been working on this. Like you said that we met the last time in 2020, and I had already been working on this. There are a few of these short songs are on earlier albums. There's a piece called a Dorothy Parker piece called A Very Short Song that Laura Osnes recorded on my previous album called My Lifelong Love. I think there's one other that is already out in the world, released. I have to remember which one that is. But they have lived in other, you know, without being part of a song cycle. It was really, once I started to have four or five of them, I thought, how many of these can I find? How substantial is this song cycle? And I would Google like very short songs, very short poems. I would look, you know, poems with fewer than 10 lines and things like that. And then every time I was lingering in a bookstore or a library, I'd go through the poetry section and really just flip through poetry books and look at the length of a poem. Mm-hmm. Interestingly, what emerged is that the first handful of poems that I chose were all written by women poets. Mm-hmm. And so as I started to craft this into a song cycle, I thought, can I make that another parameter? What if they are all women poets? And so the 16 songs are all women poets. On the album, that's not true for the whole album, but it is for the short song cycle. It was just sometimes in order to finish something, you have to give yourself a set of parameters. Right. And, you know, what are the boundaries? The boundaries are they're very short songs. The boundaries are that they're all written by women poets. And so then there are other themes that come forth through the song cycle, but I wouldn't say that they are linked. Like you could say it's about being a woman, or it's about, because it isn't. But there are some themes that come up over and over again through those writings.
Once when I was young and true, someone left me sad, broke my brittle heart in two, and that is very bad. Love is for unlucky folk, love is but a curse. Once there was a heart I broke, think is worse.
Talk about, because I want people to understand also that setting poetry to music is entirely different than setting lyrics setting lyrics to music, because yeah. It's not like, and some poems don't lend themselves to music. So that's also a bit of a challenge. So talk about that as well, because there's a little bit of a, I know you may, you, I think I read in some of your, either your liner notes or wherever you said, sometimes you would find a poem and discover there was no easy way in terms of fitting music in, because some poems just don't lend themselves to music, right?
Yes. Well, some poems have their own music in them. There's, Emily Dickinson is pretty, has many poems that that have the same rhythm. And there's a joke I use when I'm teaching lyric writing. There's a joke that a lot of Emily Dickinson poems can be scanned to the theme to Gilligan's Island. That the scansion of the poem fits into that theme song. And so if you're working with a poem that has an existing rhythm that's meant to be that fixed, it's very hard to put music on it that doesn't just fall into those patterns. So there's less room for me to be creative or original. And there's also more likelihood that I'll mess up what the poet's already done. I find that with Edna St. Vincent Millay. Sometimes it's hard for me to, although I do have one of her poems here, but I find it hard to crack into her rhythm. And then there are other poems I've written. I've set several poems by Christina Rossetti because I feel like there's space in them for, there's space for my music to contribute to the experience. You know, a couple things. One is I think it's my job when I'm working with existing poetry to figure out how to make the listener hear the poem the way that I feel it. You know, like I want to communicate to you, this is what this poem makes me feel like. And therefore, this is what I think it means. Not necessarily this is what it means. How could I know that? But this is what it means to me. This is how it makes me feel. And the other thing I wanted to say that in response to your question is that Stephen Sondheim wrote about this too, about the difference between lyric writing and poetry writing. And it's specific to how lyrics exist in time. You know, if you hear a line and you think, wait, I'm not sure I understood that, you can't go back when you're listening. I mean, now, of course, like with the way we stream and recordings and all, you can. But if you're meant to hear a song in real time, the composer has to give you enough space to process what you're hearing. It's also, there's not a lot of room for repetition. There are places where I do repeat a line of poetry, or I add an ah or a vocalization or something, sometimes because it's an emotional expansion and sometimes because I think the listener needs some space before more words come. But you can't have a chorus like in a pop song or a theater song that you can go back to and just keep landing on that hook. We don't do that because that's not what the... That's not how the poem works.
In the space between hello and how are you, my thoughts surge, my words tumble, my heart leaps, my lips mumble. In this moment, there is ardor, longing, like a storm, more than can be said with words alone. Small talk is small.
Talk also about, because I always talk about, especially, I mean, with cast recordings, it's different, obviously, because a cast recording has a plot-driven sequence of songs. But I always tell people it's really important when you're listening to a vocalist recording that they also spend time sequencing their album, because it's, for them, it's an important journey they're taking you on, whether it's an emotional journey or a story they're trying to tell, by the songs they select and then the order that they put the songs on the album. And they, I tell people to listen to an album from beginning to end.
Yes.
And I wanted you to talk about the sequencing of this album, because it's a little bit different, because it is structured in a certain way.
It is.
So talk about the structuring of the album, because you do, as you mentioned, you did have the small talk song cycle, which is in here, but it's in three different pieces and it's surrounded by different things. So talk That's about right. how it was put together.
Yeah.
I thought it was fascinating, because it also makes it for a really interesting listening experience when you listen to it.
That's great. This is you're among the first people to give me feedback on this, so I appreciate the question a lot. I've actually had several drafts of the order of the album, and in my own reviewing, listening to it, and I have a few friends who have listened to it and given me feedback that things were in the wrong order prior to this. I am very happy with this order. I really thought two things. One, the small talk. If I did all 16 of those in a row, I think that there are two things. One, you would start to think it was an album of short songs, and then when you got to the 17th song, either you would be like, "Wait, what is this? What is this long thing? I haven't been prepped for that." Or if it's the other way around, if the song cycle was at the end of the album, then you would have all these beautiful orchestrations at the beginning, and you get to the end, and it would sort of peter out with just voice and piano. And the last piece of the song cycle was quite small, actually. So thinking about the balance of instrumentation, like how can every time you hear a new instrument or a new orchestration, can that feel fresh, that there's nothing that feels tedious? Thinking about making sure that a song doesn't end in one key and then the next song begins in the same key, that you want to feel like it has a lift or a palate cleanser or something before you move on to the next piece. But I did think about that. And then I started thinking about the voices. And in this case specifically, I thought, well, you have to start with the Rebecca Luker recordings. Like they are the gift to the universe that there are three more Rebecca Luker songs that people haven't heard, mm-hmm. whether they're mine or not, that we get to hear Rebecca sing again is really amazing. And her husband, Danny Burstein, and I have had several conversations about how to release them and, how to honor her. He heard them. We tried to release them before she died and could not manage to do that in a way that didn't feel like we were exploiting something about mm-hmm. the timing of her illness. So anyway, I wanted to start with those. And then thinking about, there aren't as many male voices as female voices on the album. And so I wanted to balance that so it didn't start to feel like you were only hearing female voices. So there's a lot about what the experience is for the listener. Do you get a palate cleanser right when you need a palate cleanser, right when you might be thinking, okay, I get what this is, then the next thing that comes is very different. So I do hope that people listen to it as a whole. Or I listened to it, actually this morning I listened to it with my younger daughter in two parts. There is a moment, I think there, if we're thinking of it like a show, there's an intermission right after the title song, "Let This Darkness Be a Bell Tower." Mm-hmm. Could be a little break, and then maybe there's an act two.
Right. And my listeners get tired of hearing this, but I always tell people, it's you have the time and you need to take the time, which is to sit down. And if you can, uninterrupted with no distractions, if you have headphones, put your headphones on and sit and listen to any recording, any new recording the first time from beginning to end. And just
I love that you preach that. It is hard to do. And my husband and I have a record player, and we've committed to listening to albums on vinyl. And we do sit down in the evening and put one on and sit there and listen to it. A side one of an album isn't as long as a full
right.
CD recording. So you can have a moment to get up and flip the album. But it is hard to commit to that without checking your phone or multitasking. But to mm-hmm. the art of listening is something to be valued and something to train yourself to do, not like homework, but like, to lower your cortisol, to like allow yourself mm-hmm. to feel like reading a novel, like allowing yourself to just dip into this world. And so, and I do think that the poetry settings in this case require a kind of active listening. I think if you check out or multitask, you won't hear it. You
right.
won't understand.
Right. Yeah, this is it. This is not just a simple vocalist recording. This is a kind of a different thing. As you said, they're theatrical art songs in a way. Mm-hmm. And I want to kind of rewind for a second to talk about what something you just brought up, which was the vocals and the vocalists, and talk about the process of selecting the vocalists for the album and then assigning who was going to do what, who was going to sing what, because you have such an amazing array of talent on this album that people I know that you've worked with before, but you've got such amazing singers on this album. Talk about, as you were putting this together, was it, you have this, you've decided that here's the songs you're going to put in, here's the 26 tracks, now I need to find which vocalists I want to call in to do what, or did you have people in mind? I mean, what was your process for this?
Yep, that's a great question. It's some of both. Yeah, mm-hmm. Those are all, the answer is yes. And
okay.
I think in some cases, like Rebecca had those songs were written decades ago, some of them, at there was a program called the New Voices Collective, which Joel Fram and Annette Gilles and Jen Bender created, just concerts at Symphony Space. And they asked musical theater music directors or people who were playing piano in the pit orchestras of Broadway shows who were also moonlighting as composers to present their work. So this was mm-hmm. when I was in my late 20s, early 30s. And they programmed, they had beautiful singers, and they gave you a chance to present your work for an audience. And people came to the New Voices Collective concerts not really knowing what they were going to get. Danny Burstein was the host of many of them. There was always a little bit of a chamber instrumentation. And Rebecca Luker was one of the singers. And so these two of these three poems I wrote for New Voices Collective, and Rebecca sang them there. And in fact, we recorded these three songs, I'm pretty sure it was in 2016, because she had premiered them and she knew them and they were in her voice. And Mary Dorman, who played the cello, was on the concert. And so I just took them into the studio and I was like, let's archive that we just did this. Let's remember that we did this. So those recordings have been on my hard drive for a decade. And that was the beginning of that. So those songs were always going to be Rebecca's recordings. And then I work as Kate Baldwin's music director. We refer to each other as work wives. We do concerts all over together. She sung so much of the music that I've written. And as I was starting to write the 1 minute songs, she learned a bunch of them. And so she has a set of seven of them that she often does in concert. And I thought, well, let's record Kate singing these seven songs. And then as I wrote more of them, I thought, well, I don't know if I want Kate to sing all of them, though she could. but what other voices can I get on there? So then I started thinking about who are the other great singing actresses who have wonderful, what we call legit voices in the theater and are known for being legit singers. Sierra Bagus was, did Christine Daae in Phantom of the Opera for ever. And yeah. Ruthie Ann Miles recently did Light in the Piazza. And, you know, they just have these beautiful trained voices. And of course, then you think, well, do I have something for Kelly O'Hara? But Kelly O'Hara's piece was always going to be her recording. But once those people were on the album, I was like, who are the other people that are in this category that sing like this, that should be on this album? And I will say I got pretty much to the end of it. And I am a really close and really inspired by my friend Titus Burgess, close with and inspired by. And I thought, you know, the voice that's missing from this album is Titus's. And so I went looking for a poem that I could set for Titus. That was the last piece that I wrote. It was called The Trumpet. And I have a colleague, friend, Liesl Whitaker, who is a retired Army trumpet player from the Army band, who now works on Broadway shows. And I thought, I want to write something for Liesl, who plays the trumpet, and Titus, who sings like a trumpet. Mm-hmm. And I found a poem called The Trumpet. And so that was the last piece I wrote.
as the trumpet blowing chases the dreams of men. As the dawn glowing, the stars that left unlit the land and water. Scatter the dew that covers the print of last night's lovers. Ah, the dew that covers the print of last night's lovers. Scatter it! Scatter it! While you are listening to the clear horn, lovelier than any mysteries. Open your eyes to the air that has washed the eyes on the stars. Through all the dewy night, up with the light.
So that one was specifically because I needed those voices on the album. But the other one sort of fell into place as a match of singer and piece.
Yeah. And I have to say, kind of starting the album off with the Rebecca tracks is really, it's kind of a really moving, beautiful way to start the album. No, I mean, even for if you don't know, if listeners don't know that much about Rebecca or her life and her passing, she passed away in December of 2020 from ALS. She's got, I don't even know how to describe Rebecca's voice. And if you ever saw her performing live, she just, one of the most magnificent soprano voices in Broadway history. I mean, just amazing voice. But it's just such a gorgeous way to start the album because the tracks, the poems are beautiful. Her vocals are beautiful. The arrangements are gorgeous. And it just kind of really sets the mood and gets you, it draws you, immediately draws you into the recording and kind of gets you ready. And then following that with Titus, with the trumpet, gets you even more geared, more wound up and ready to go. And then you get into the first selection of the short, you know, the short small talk songs right after that. So it's a great way to start the album.
When I am dead, my dearest, sing no sad songs for me. Shady cypress tree, be the green grass above me with showers and dewdrops wet. And if thou wilt, I shall not hear the night. not rise nor set. Happily I may remember, and happily
I'm really glad to hear it. That was I think the third draft of the order. I originally started with the title song, "Let This Darkness Be a Bell Tower," which I think is a beautiful song, beautiful recording. My friend Hila Pleitman records it so gorgeously, and people said it was heavy. It was sort of hard to find your way into that song as the opening, and then you were like, I'm not sure what this album is. Mm-hmm. And so then once I moved it to the middle of the album, I think you're ready for it when it arrives.
Yeah.
It has the theme of the whole album.
Yeah, I mean, it's a relatively complex song to get into. It's a complex mm-hmm. poem to get into. But by then, it's the case of when you've got, because I know poetry is difficult for a lot of people. So listening to it, because you've got all the small pieces going, you've got the listener's ear now trained, and you've got them now focused, so that when you get to some of the more challenging pieces, it works. Does that make sense? It really does. I mean,
it does make sense. It was my hope that that would be true.
Yeah.
And then, of course, if it's not true, you can skip over the ones you don't like.
but then you're losing out on the whole concept of listening to it as a piece, because it really is. It's a whole piece. And I know, talk about how the pandemic affected the project, because I know it sort of became a bit of a pandemic project for you, right?
It did. The writing, especially. So, I actually, you know, the way all my recording projects are organized, I use Dropbox on my computer, and I have a Dropbox that is called the two album project, because my record producer, Jeffrey Lesser, and I went into the studio thinking we were going to record A Quiet Revolution and this one that we called it the Art Song album, A Quiet Revolution and the Art Song album at the same time. So we really, like, the Kelly O'Hara recording was made, I think, the same day that Betsy Wolf recorded Casual, and Casual came out in 2020, and this piece just came out on Friday. Mm-hmm. The pictures are from the same day in the studio. So we were recording them at the same time. I finished A Quiet Revolution, and I wasn't done with the Art Song album, and A Quiet Revolution came out in March 2020, and then we entered 18 months of not being able to go into a recording studio. Like, mm-hmm. Everybody knows the whole world was shut down. But I think for the theater, it was, what I remember is that singing was considered worse than anything else, you know, because you might spit on someone when you were mm-hmm. singing. And so then, mm-hmm. you know, you were a contagion. And when we did record, there were things like, you had to, you know, like, sterilize the microphone and air out the recording booth for an hour before the next person could come in. But then you had to pay for that hour, even if you weren't using it. It just became prohibitive if the studio was open at all. I mean, in the early days, studios were just closed. Broadway mm-hmm. was closed. Everything's closed. And so I thought, well, I'm not going to finish this album anytime soon. I can't get into the studio. And so maybe I will just keep writing. And I even found collaboration hard, because you can do it on Zoom, but it's much more effective when you're sitting in the same room with someone. And that was hard. So I thought, well, what can I do by myself? And the short songs proved really healthy for me, because I could finish one in a day or two. You know, once I found the poem and once my brain was ready to start writing, I could write it pretty quickly. And so there's just a sense of accomplishing something that was really hard to come by in those dark months. Mm-hmm. I'm sure we all can relate to how hard it was to feel like you had any purpose or any deadline or anything. So in some ways it helped me. I also think in some ways the what the album feels like to me feels timely in a way. It's timeless. Like I said, some of these songs are the London songs I wrote when I was in college in the 90s. So the songwriting is very, very old, but the meaning of some of these pieces feels very relevant. The idea of being a beacon in dark times, which is what the title is. And then there are several pieces that were written in war times that are about like enduring great stress and great conflict. In some cases, you know, if you download the booklet, the digital booklet, you can read a little paragraph story about each of the songs. And several of them are written by people who were surviving war, fighting in war, just home from war, enduring slavery, you know, the enduring concentration camp. You know, there's great conflict. The writers turned to poetry or were poets to express this great need. And I think we might be in a moment where we need to connect with that. We need to feel the connection with other people who are feeling great stress.
What mother does not walk does not hold her child's hand, feeling how cold, how dry, how warm. What mother does not give her child her own large mitten if the smaller hand seems colder than her expect to cross the street with her child? A small step up on the curb, walking with a friend, talking of the day, or not talking.
So on that same note, I wanted to ask you, because this is an album that I think is kind of important, and it is an album that I really want listeners to kind of sit and really immerse themselves in, what do you hope listeners take away from the listening experience? What do you hope they get from this, both emotionally, intellectually, you know, on all different levels? What do you hope listeners get from listening to the album from Bell Tower?
That's great. My visceral reaction is I hope that a listener can connect with their own breath, you know, that you can feel the you inside you when you listen to this piece, that there's something about how you do have to turn internally a bit to listen that closely, to listen to what the poems mean, to listen what the music is doing, what the singers are saying. And that by the time you get to the end of the album, you feel like you have lived a little bit. You have experienced a little bit. You have felt empathy and connected with many, many other voices, the poets and the singers and me, and that you have some sense of connection at the end of it. But really, you know, the very last musical phrase on the album is you hear the final chord, and then there's a little treble figure that fades off and does not resolve. It leads you. It echoes a line that was earlier in the last song, and it asks a question and just hangs in the air. And I like that the album sort of dissipates into space instead of being a big final chord and a button and it's over and the audience. Oh, there's a siren going by. I'm in New York City. There's a siren going by. But that it doesn't end in a big cadence or a big final announcement, but it hangs there like we don't have the answers.
Right.
But we are going to sit with the questions.
Right. Exactly. I have you here. Also want to ask, or at least talk a little bit about Maestra.
How nice. Yeah, sure.
Because I wanted to let people know about Maestra who don't know what it is. Can you explain the importance of Maestra and your involvement and what they do, because I think it's a fantastic organization.
Thank you. Thanks for giving me space to talk about that. Maestra Music is a not-for-profit organization that I founded that provides support, visibility, and community for the women and gender-expansive people who make the music in the theater. Our mission statement expanded recently, and I'll get into that a little bit. But it started when I was the music director of the off-Broadway production of Sweet Charity in 2016, and our director asked me and my other musical collaborator, Mary Mitchell Campbell, to hire an all-female band. And I lean into the why of this because I think it's significant. You know, Lee Silverman was our director, and her vision for doing a revival of Sweet Charity, this was the one with Sutton Foster, of doing Sweet Charity in 2016, was that you can't just sort of do the Hooker with a Heart of Gold story, but that she was envisioning a story that was about how when Charity was safe in the dressing room with her girlfriends, she had a different kind of demeanor than when she went out in the world looking for a man to love her. And that there's something about putting on your armor when you go out into the world looking for romance that is different from when you let down your guard in the place where you feel safe. That's my interpretation of what we were doing. That I don't know if Lee would say that I nailed it, but that's how I envisioned it. And she said that because so many of the songs take place in the dressing room with Charity and her girlfriends, and the band is going to be visible on stage, that she wanted the band to be in costume and like to be part of the fabric of what that safe space felt like. So she said it's very important that these musicians look like New York City, that there's a diversity to who's there, but that they are all women. And so there were six musicians needed. I was one of them. And it took months to find these musicians. It was just, I had to admit that my default was that I would just hire my guys. I love the guys that I play with. I still play with them. But in this case, I couldn't hire them. And so I was like, okay, who's next? And where is the drummer? Where is the bass player? Where is the rhythm guitarist, you know, and those are instruments that tend to be thought of as more masculine instruments. Like, we can get into the ridiculousness of that, but that is the case. Like, it was easy to find a cellist. It was easy to find a flute player, mm-hmm. but it was hard to find a drummer and a rhythm guitar player and a bass player. And so in the process of looking for them and talking to the music contractors who were like, oh, yeah, I have a recommendation for you. And then when that woman wasn't available, they didn't have a second. So they're like, oh, this is the woman who plays that instrument in all of New York City.
Singular.
Yeah. And then, and it sort of challenged all of us. You know, even they were like, that's weird. I think it's weird that I don't know more women who play the bass. Like, that's weird. But when we finally found the women, they were great. Many of them said, I've been trying to break into this business for a long time. I can't figure out how to get hired. And I thought, okay, well, I have a lot of information now. I had a spreadsheet of a lot of people who had been recommended to me who weren't available for one reason or another. And then I hired my web designers to build a little database. And I said, I'm just going to make this a public service. So I don't want people calling me, and I don't want to be an agent. And I don't really know if they're all good players or not, but they'd say they're players. So let's create a system where people can find them and research them and go to their websites and just know that they exist. And once that started, I reached out to my colleagues and was like, can you add yourself to this database, or do you have people that you can recommend? And it grew and grew and grew. The Maestra directory now has over 3,000 people in it, women and gender expansive people, and it's global. Mm-hmm. We have, you know, regional groups and affinity groups and programming. We're officially a not-for-profit. We have a board of directors. We have a gala. You know, it's like, it's turned into a big thing. You know, my husband and I joke that when I got the letter of, you know, you're officially your 501c3 nonprofit, I was like, ha ha, they're letting me create a not-for-profit. Apparently I run a not-for-profit now. And now it's like, I definitely run a not-for-profit. Like, so much of my brain space is on managing and fundraising and securing and, you know, programming.
But it's a really important nonprofit. It really is. I actually looked at the website this week so I could talk to you about it. And the directory is amazing. It's amazing how all of the artists that are listed on the directory, including yourself, who are all on there with their skills and what instruments they play and a biography and their credits and all. It's fantastic.
How you can find them. And then we have, you know, real leaders in our industry who have joined, you know, sympathetically, I guess is the word, or like Sarah Bareilles is in the directory. Alicia Keys is in the directory. Janine Tesori is in the directory. Kirsten Childs is in the directory. You know, like the idea that these people, you know, you can't, I don't think you can write to Sarah Bareilles directly. I think you get to her manager, but she's there saying like, I am a maestra. This is important work. I am among you. I am one of you, you know? And so, it's fantastic. And then our only criteria is that you have to actually be doing this professionally, not like, oh, I think it would be fun to write a musical someday, but like, you're doing it. You're looking for your opportunities. Then, great. Then join us.
Yes. And on Monday, April 6th,
we're having our gala.
You're having your gala at City Winery in New York at Pier 57.
Yep.
And it starts at 6:30 with cocktails and hors d'oeuvres. And there's an 8 p.m. concert.
Yes.
It's co-hosted by Betsy Wolf and Hannah Cruz, both of whom currently on Broadway. Betsy is doing Death Becomes Her, and Hannah is starring in Chess as Svetlana. And Shayna Taub is receiving the inaugural Amplify Award, which is really exciting. She's the first woman to solo win Tony Awards for Best Score and Best Book for Suffs, which is touring the country right now. And if you have not seen the show, I highly recommend you see Suffs. It's a fantastic musical about the women's suffrage movement. I saw it here in LA when it came through LA, and I actually saw I had already seen the show, and I knew it, but I had a lot of friends in LA who had not seen it when it was in New York, and who saw it, and they were like, oh my God, I loved it. I had no idea what a great show it was. And they were like, and the score. I said, I know. I told people you should see it. You should see this show. Anyway.
I'm so glad. Thank you for being a champion. And Shayna has solo album, at least one, maybe more than one, out in the world too. She's a fantastic songwriter. And, you know, she's on the original cast album of Ragtime as a performer herself, playing Emma Goldman. So she's a force. And I'm thrilled to be able to honor her. I've known her for a long time, and just watched her rise through the ranks to be exactly what you said, this Tony Award winning force of nature taking over the world.
Right. And I again, and people should, I'm going to include a link to the website. So if people want to get tickets for the event on April 6th, they can get them on the link that I'm going to provide on the webpage. Also, want to
I'll tell you one other fun thing about that is that we, you know, it's because it's a gala, you know, there it's the tickets are not cheap. But I can't tell you yet, but we do have some fantastic performers lined up and we're going to announce that soon. But we have a program or an option called Pay It Forward. You can buy a Pay It Forward ticket so that someone, we usually give them to maestras, a maestro member who couldn't afford a ticket or for some reason couldn't afford a ticket, can go. And mm-hmm. so sometimes when people can't go, they buy a pay it forward ticket, which I offer as an option for people who maybe aren't going to be in New York on that day.
Right. And there is also a donate button on the website. Right. So you can donate because it is a nonprofit, as Georgia just said. It
tax is deductible.
It's tax deductible. It is a nonprofit organization. And I highly recommend that you give to Maestra because it is doing excellent work for women who are pursuing careers in music and music and theater. It's really, really important.
Thank you. You know, I want to just say that we had in our first, the first time we looked at statistics, the first statistic that we gathered was that in a season, I don't have it in front of me. So, you know, it was more than 5 or 6 years ago before the pandemic. In that season, there were 98 available drum chairs on Broadway. There were 98 chances to be hired to play at the drums on Broadway that season. And two of those chairs were filled by women.
That's
two out of 98. And there were statistics about that season. There were no women hired to play guitar unless they were visible on stage. So women could be hired if you could look at them, but not if you just had to hear them. We've come a long way since then. Those statistics are out of date. Mm-hmm. And there has been a lot of change. There's a lot more intentionality about making sure that everyone has opportunity. You know, mm-hmm. I think it's dangerous now to talk about diversity in this moment, but to me, diversity just means that that all people have access to the opportunities.
Right.
And we're trying to make sure that people who maybe weren't seen before are seen and considered.
Terrific. Well, Georgia, I'm so thrilled that you are back here on the Broadway Radio Show and that we got to talk about Bell Tower, which is out right now. From Concord Theatricals. It's a fantastic album. I really recommend you listen to it and you purchase it. Purchase a download. And don't just stream it because purchasing puts money in people's pockets and streaming does not.
I mean, I know you've all heard, but I get statements sometimes for less than a penny.
Yeah.
I'll be like, you know, 97 people listen to your album and you get like a percentage of a cent for that.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Stream it. I'd rather you stream it than not stream it. Oh, also, we're going to release sheet music. The sheet music is going to be available. So it really is my hope that people who sing will sing these songs, you know, and there's going to be a physical booklet. I want it to be on the shelf of voice teachers and the shelf of singers and musical theater and classical music aficionados, that it's just part of your collection. So buying the sheet music helps, downloading the album helps, telling people to program the songs, giving them to people who might sing them. Those are all ways that you can help make sure that people who like this kind of music can keep doing it.
And I will have a link to Georgia's website so you can follow what she's doing and find the album, and as well as a link to the Maestro website so you can donate and maybe purchase tickets to the gala in April. So, Georgia, thank you so much for taking the
time.
Thank
you for inviting me again. It's so nice to be back and to talk to you again.
Quiet friend who has come so far, feel how your breathing makes more space around you. Let this darkness be a bell tower. is it like such intensity of pain? If the drink is bitter,